Before we get to Josh and Antonio talking about homecoming on Amazon, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of Post Show Recaps, and those are friends over at Uncle Bud's Hemp. Hit the jingle.
Make it a hemp healthy day, the Uncle Bud's way, it works.
Yeah, Uncle Bud's hemp oil is all the buzz right now, but not the buzz you're thinking. Got pain, sore muscles, dry skin? Find out how Uncle Bud's Hemp has a natural solution for you, because Uncle Bud's is bringing the miracle of hemp oil to life with a natural collection of hemp-infused pain relief, skin care, and personal care products. Uncle Bud's has made hemp oil affordable and accessible to everyone. Head over to your local Walmart or GNC and look for the giant hemp leaf in the natural section. That's where you're going to find Uncle Bud's assortment of hemp-healthy products. Add Uncle Bud's hemp products to your daily routine. When you go to UncleBudsHemp.com, you can find a Walmart or GNC store near you and learn more about the benefits of hemp oil. And as an added bonus for our listeners, Uncle Bud's is going to give away 30 samples to products who already love Uncle Bud's hemp or are planning on trying Uncle Bud's hemp products. How do you enter? All you have to do is send a photo with the product or a one-liner on Twitter telling why you love the product. Include hashtag Uncle Bud's to be eligible for the free product.
Make it a hemp healthy day, the Uncle Bud's way, it works.
Everybody, Josh Wigler here. Just going to cut right to the chase. No need to beat around the bush. I'm here with Antonio Mazzaro. Antonio, what's going on?
Hello. No bush beating.
No bush beating. Just some pineapple cobbler realness that we are serving straight to your face here on a special edition of Post Show Recaps, as Antonio and I are about to sink our teeth into homecoming, I believe is how you pronounce it. Homecoming. Amazon's homecoming.
The hell is wrong with you?
It's homecoming. I don't know.
I want to eat some gnocchi. That's, I thought pineapple. No, gnocchi. Yes.
Oh, I was going to make a gnocchi joke, but I forgot. I don't know what happened.
You just did it there though. I shouldn't explain it. This is bad.
Oh, it's good. It's good. Hey everybody. Oh my gosh. First of all, Antonio, a pleasure to be speaking with you. It has been several minutes since we've done the podcast thing.
It has. How are you? Probably at least 6 minutes. Yeah. Life is good. Been watching some good television shows here at the end of the year. And, I think you and I should talk about some of them, Josh.
I think we should as well. Certainly the last time Antonio and I, we were doing post show recaps together, we were talking about The Sinner, USA Network's The Sinner, with Carrie Coon and the Bill Pullman Antonio, and that show ended. And when that show ended, we discussed possibly getting back together to talk about Homecoming, Amazon's Homecoming.
Didn't say it that way.
Which is starring Julia Roberts, and it's directed by Sam Esmail, who's the creator of Mr. Robot, which is another USA Network show that Antonio and I talk about on the reg when it is on. Homecoming came out at the beginning of November. Life got in the way, as it often does, and Antonio and I did not get together to talk about Homecoming, but here we are, folks. 2018 about to draw to a close, thank God, and we are here to talk about not only Homecoming today, only Homecoming, but over the next couple of weeks we are going to be giving you some end of year podcasting about some of the shows that have come and gone along the way, especially in the past several weeks. Maybe dig back a little bit deeper for one or two as we go along. Who knows how many of these we are going to do. Certainly this one, we've already talked about doing a couple of others. So keep an eye out for that on your podcast feed. PostShowRecaps.com/iTunes is, of course, the way to subscribe. And these mystery podcasts will be appearing as we go, beginning here with Homecoming. Did I set the stage? Is that basically what we're doing here, Antonio?
You did, Josh. Happy holidays. Is that what we're doing? We're not saying H's.
Happy holidays, starting with Homecoming, starting Heidi Bergman. I'll stop. This is a bad recurring bit. We're going to bring the H's back into our dialogue at this point.
That's perfect. I'm glad to have the H's back. I was sad when they were gone. I missed them. So I'm happy that they have returned. Heroes, healers, and hustlers abound. Yes. This is fantastic.
Yes. Okay. So we're talking about Homecoming.
Homecoming.
Today.
You said it correctly for once.
I said it correctly. Amazon's Homecoming, a 10-episode drama on Amazon Prime streaming service. It came out in the beginning of November. It is based on a podcast by the creators Eli Horowitz and Micah Bloomberg, not not Mike Bloom. And it is a little bit of a thriller. It's a little bit of a thrill ride. It's got the great Julia Roberts starring in the main role. It has a great actor who is on the rise named Stefan James. Your boy, Antonio Bobby Cannavale, is a part of this show. My boy, Shea Whigham, fellow Wig, is in the mix here as well. And a series regular for Alex Karpovsky from Girls, even though he's like, spoiler alert, he's barely in the show. It's every episode is directed by Sam Esmail, even though he is not the writer of this show. It's a very easy to watch series. We're giving you a little bit of the spiel in case you guys haven't watched it yet. This is the non-spoiler stuff we're talking about here, and I think the most important non-spoiler selling point is these episodes are quick, man. These episodes are like a half hour long, sometimes a little bit less. And what's great too is like the last couple of minutes of every episode is almost always just like a provocative yet static image with the credits coming in with like 3 minutes to spare. This is one of the easiest dramas to watch ever.
100%. And Sam Esmail blazing a new trail in terms of these, the length of these episodes and the binge ability of these episodes from a drama standpoint. We're used to comedies having this half an hour episode length, and we're used to maybe even dramedies having this half an hour episode length. But this is a straight up thriller, like you said. So the pacing is very important, and shooting the episodes in the way that they're shot, and without spoiling anything about the design, there are a couple things going on here, but by I think pacing them the way that it's set up and having these episodes play out, the structure is always very fun, and I don't think you're ever left with anything that drags. And that's I think for a drama, that's really important. For a show with key players in it and people like Julia Roberts who frankly could be doing whatever they wanted.
Anything she wants.
Yeah, it's really refreshing to see a confident, brave show that is saying, we'd love to book Julia Roberts for 10 one-hour episodes.
I thought you were going to say we would love to book Julia Roberts for Puerto Rico, which is also true.
Yeah, absolutely. Always. She can come on anytime she wants. Yeah. She doesn't even have to pronounce the H if she doesn't want to.
Sure.
She can do whatever bits she wants.
Yes.
But I think when you're talking about someone like Julia Roberts and you're talking about something like Amazon, you might think, like, let's get as much as we can out of this project, but it is a confident and brave project that is willing to just set the episode length whatever they want. Like you said, they're not all 25 minutes and gone. There's some 22, some 37. It's all over the place, but it is in service of the story, in service of appropriate ending and beginning points. And I think, like you said, just one of the most compulsively bingeable and bingeability sky high shows that you're going to watch that's out there. So for me, I've heard my brother watched it, for example. My brother and his wife watched it, and they watched it in a day. They're just like, oh yeah, we started and we watched an episode, and then that Saturday, we knocked it out. And I think that's fantastic because you're keyed into the service and you've got your Amazon Prime up and you can just really just knock this out. It's like I don't know what the total runtime is. Do you know what it is?
I mean, it can't be much more than 5 hours, a little more, possibly.
It's
10 episodes, probably a little bit less than 5 hours, maybe a tiny bit more, no more than 6 hours at the very least. So it's like, it's really perfect for a sleepy Saturday or a sleepy Sunday, like you said. Like, you can knock this out in a day very easily.
Smart. And yeah, it's definitely not, it's like two feature length movies or 2.5 feature length movies. And it is very much like a day long binge. And I think that's really smart in this day and age. And I hope there are people that pick up an episode because they don't know anything about it. This is based on, I think we talked about, like, this is a podcast. This was a podcast that existed on the Gimlet Network, which is a podcast network that is all over the place and creating a lot of very popular podcasts and connected and trying a lot of different things. They created a scripted podcast. The scripted podcast was a big hit. And then Sam Esmail got attached, and then Julia Roberts got attached, and then we're watching it on Amazon Prime. So, if you haven't listened to the podcast, can certainly do that. What do you think, Josh? Should people watch the show before the podcast, or podcast before the show? Or
so, podcast being the medium that you and I operate in, Antonio, perhaps a controversial thing to say, but I think that the show is better than the podcast by a good margin. I think that the first season of the podcast is really, really good, and the second season of the podcast is really less good.
That's not a hot take. I think I'm on the same page. Yeah,
I don't think that's a hot take. I believe believe that each season of the podcast is 6 episodes. I believe that each episode within the seasons of the podcast, I think, are about the same length as the episodes here on the Amazon adaptation, about a half hour, maybe a tiny bit more, maybe a tiny bit less. The caliber of talent involved is certainly very high in the podcast as well. The Julia Roberts role that is here on the show, Heidi Bergman, who is the main character, who is a caseworker, essentially a therapist for a group of military veterans who are dealing with post-traumatic stress. We'll get into the story in a little bit. She is voiced by and originated by Catherine Keener. Fantastic Catherine Keener. The Stefan James role, who is sort of like the young military guy, Walter Cruz, who is the male lead of this show, is voiced by Oscar Isaac. Obviously a lot more star power behind the role in the podcast version. David Schwimmer plays the Bobby Cannavale role, and it's very two different versions of this one same character. Both of them are great. I don't know which one I would say I like more, because I actually really love the Schwimmer interpretation of that character, and of course that's the original. I say all of that as the credentials of the podcast. If you're the type of person, you're on the go listening to a podcast and an original story, a scripted, narratively driven podcast, if that's easier for your life than sitting down on a Sunday or a Saturday or any other day of the week, if you've got the time and just knocking out this whole first season of Homecoming on Amazon, then by all means, go for the podcast. I think you're really going to enjoy it. I will say, having come into Amazon's Homecoming with the podcast already in my vision of what this was going to be, I think it maybe impacted it a little bit. I think that Homecoming, the show, certainly we wouldn't be podcasting about it if you and I didn't really, really like it. But I think the things that I like the most about Amazon's adaptation, about Esmail's vision, is really that Esmail's vision, the performances. Yes. I think the acting is incredible on this show. I think the music cues, all of which are pulled from classic cinema. There isn't an original score here. There's really this Hitchcockian vibe that is being woven
in. Some actual Hitchcock score stuff here.
Indeed. Absolutely. And like the vibe, the tone, the way that the camera moves and how, the sets are designed and just the way that tension is built up throughout the show. Those are the things that I love. The story absolutely takes a backseat for me, which maybe is not the most, that's not a ringing endorsement, but I think all the other stuff are, all the things that I've laid out, that's all 10 out of 10 material. And for me, the story is like 7 out of 10, which is not bad. It's just not a knockout punch. And you may have a different interpretation of that, or a different way to score that for yourself, Antonio. But I think that that's true of the podcast as well, is that the story is totally fine. And it's all of the other stuff. I think the story is actually a lot weaker in the podcast than it is on the show. The show is really rather tight. And Amazon, I believe, they picked up Homecoming in July. I want to say July of 2017. And when they picked up the show, they picked it up for 2 seasons right off the bat. They automatically had a straight to series 2 season order, which is huge for any show, certainly for this one. But at the risk of like a minor spoiler, I guess, but I think more in terms of like an expectation setter, and we'll get into this, I'm sure, in terms of debating it once we get deeper into the story, Antonio. This is a fairly closed affair, I think, in terms of the story. For me, it feels that way, where not only are you talking about a 5-hour viewing experience, give or take a few minutes, you're also talking about a 5-hour-ish experience. And that's basically it. Like, there's going to be more Homecoming, but I think it's going to be a very different Homecoming moving forward. All of which to say, I would recommend the show over the podcast almost every day of the week.
I think you should watch the show first. I think you should absolutely listen to the podcast. I will not spoil my takes, but I just said some of the stuff on the podcast I think plays better. But I think you should watch the show first, if only because what you're saying about the story. When I rewatched the show, which you can do so quickly, I noticed that there's drama and there's suspense and there's thrill injected into the story almost from the jump. And the mystery of the show, which is not going to be a mystery if you already know the story, since it is a pretty much one-to-one adaptation, you are missing that. I have previously tweeted years ago ago when I first heard the podcast, everyone should listen to this podcast because that was when the first season was out. I thought the first season was a home run, especially because of the cast.
An home run.
Oh, and you're back to this again.
I'm back.
Oh my gosh. But anyway, I thought the first season was an home run, but I think you're right that the story, especially in the second season of the podcast, takes a real kind of leap off a cliff, shall we say. It just doesn't play as well. They were essentially able to cover two seasons of that podcast in one season of TV. We do not need anything really from season two of the podcast that isn't in season one of the TV show. When we make season two of the TV show, when anyone makes season two of the TV show. So I would say watch the show first if you don't know anything about the story. I would just say if you've only watched the show, I think the podcast is still worth listening to. The performances are fantastic. You'll enjoy the differences. And if you want to stop after season one, I wouldn't say no.
Yeah, I think watch the show, then listen to the podcast if you really liked the show, because I think that's exactly right. I think the podcast is going to blow the lid off of what the story is about, and then that story is going to be very front of mind throughout watching the show, and the show is so tight and happens so quickly that if you already know what the story is, for me at the very least, it did impact my enjoyment. Just full, you know, cards on the table. I think that I would have, like, out of this world loved Homecoming if I hadn't already, you know, listened to the podcast. Right. And I don't always feel that way about an adaptation. Oftentimes, I really like to be in the know. I think it's fun. It's cool to see the shots coming. In this case, it did not feel that way for me.
This is a thriller, and it is one of the most well-made thriller things that you'll ever see. But if the thrill is taken out by you knowing the story, it's a significantly different property. And I think that's what we're dealing with if you've heard the podcast before. That said, there's still so much to appreciate that even those of us who had seen the pod, heard, listened to the podcast, watched the show, could still really appreciate how fantastic elements of this show were. But I think the thriller element is so key to what Esmail was able to achieve with this TV show, and I think so much of that is lost if you are in on the story. You're out on the mystery, and I think that is a huge part of what this show is doing in its 10 episodes. There's a major moment that it builds to, and it's a spoiler moment if you know what's going on. Like, so it really makes a difference if you don't know the story. So that is a big part of this. Like you said, we podcast, you're listening to this on a podcast. If you like podcasts and you've never listened to a scripted podcast and you watch the show,
do it.
And there are some other great ones out there. I love the Wolverine one that was out there recently. The
Shout
horror
to Steve the editor loves Wolverine the podcast.
It's so good. I mean, that was a really, you talk about a sense of place, like that was a really good one. The Horror of Dolores Roach was a horrifically but yet wonderfully made and acted one. There's been some really good ones this year alone. So if you've never listened to a scripted podcast but you're a fan of podcasts, definitely recommend that you do that. Just watch the show first.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So let's talk about the story of Homecoming in a non-spoiler way in terms of setting up what the premise is. We've established the bona fides, the credentials, the resume of Homecoming. But what is this show about, Antonio?
Like you said, Heidi Cruz. Well, Heidi.
I thought you were going to say Heidi Klum.
Heidi Klum is not in the show. Yeah. Heidi Bergman she's an intake, let's say, caseworker at a organization that is dedicated to trying to help soldiers who have come back from combat and come back from service and from deployment reintegrate into society. So rather than taking someone right out of combat and plopping them down and saying, okay, fend for yourself, this is a reintegration program, teaching life skills, helping people adjust, helping people talk about their experiences and maybe find ways to frame those experiences in ways which will benefit them, whether it's with a job interview, whether it's integrating in terms of where they are in their lives. This is what this program is. And Julia Roberts plays Heidi Bergman, a caseworker who is responsible for the therapy, for the sessions where she talks to these soldiers who have come back from combat, and where she is responsible for reporting to her boss, played by Bobby Cannavale, Colin Belfast.
Great name. Unbelievable name.
What's going on there? Yeah, it's perfect. Sounds like a spy, doesn't he? Like, this is like, yeah, this is, he should be wearing sunglasses the whole time. But something is up here. We don't really know. It's an organization that even from the jump, you're not sure of the scope of, and you'll get introduced to the organization and what's going on in the office in a magnificent way in the first episode that'll give you some idea that this is maybe, there's something going on at the seams of whatever this is. Maybe some of these people have secondary goals. Maybe there's something more nefarious afoot. The music will key you into that. So it's not just a, let's talk to soldiers and see what's happening. It's let's talk to soldiers and see what's happening. And wait a minute, what is happening? Like, what's going on with this program?
Yeah. And so a lot of that is threaded through not only Heidi and not only her boss, but this man named Walter Cruz is this young guy, very charismatic, very funny, clearly in pain, but kind of like pain that he is keeping at bay. And he's the person who Heidi is going to spend most of her time doing the casework with, and their growing relationship in the therapy sessions is going to provide so much of the fuel of Homecoming, so much of the, not just the narrative action, but also the emotional content as well. And this is really the stuff, right? Like this is why Homecoming is so great. And you can really sense, even if you, I think maybe if you didn't know that it was based on a podcast, you wouldn't automatically know that this was based on an audio drama. But I think certainly knowing that it's based on a podcast helps clarify almost this stage play quality to a lot of the scenes where it's very dialogue heavy. And it's often the strongest scenes of the show are just two people in chairs sitting across from each other and talking. The sessions between Heidi and Walter are spectacular. And I think in the case of the podcast, I think to really give you sort of that authority of what this drama is going to be like and why this is a story in this medium that seems a little unusual, but is worth taking seriously. For that purpose, I understand why they have someone as A-list as Oscar Isaac in the role. I think for the purpose of the show, not that Stephan James isn't a credible established actor. He's been in a lot of stuff. He's been he's really on the rise right now. In fact, I believe he's starring in If Beale Street Could Talk right now. He was in Race. So like his star is very much on the rise, and I think that this show very rightfully, I hope, has vaulted his career even further down the line. But coming into it, he's not necessarily a name or face that you know too well. I think that really serves the energy of this show, because so much of Homecoming depends on you as a viewer finding yourself falling for and getting invested in this character, and to find yourself in Heidi's shoes as maybe she is finding herself in that similar position of, this is a very compelling human being. This is a very compelling guy. Right. This is somebody who she herself is finding herself drawn to more and more and more, maybe in a way that is challenging her role as a therapist, and certainly maybe challenging the nature of the Homecoming initiative that she works for.
Yeah, Bobby Cannavale and his actions as Colin Belfast, notwithstanding, there she has a role that she has to play, and she's clearly given, Heidi is given a lot of freedom to act in this role, but clearly also maybe the organization has an agenda, and maybe those two things are at loggerheads at some point. So there's a lot of grist between, in the scenes, really, between the two characters, or between just individual characters. There are a lot of the scenes from this show, and again adapted directly from the podcast, where Heidi is talking on the phone with Colin, and it's presented in split screen sometimes it's not, but you're getting the conversations that if you're thinking about what happened with the audio medium, there are a lot of really interesting auditory things that happen in the Homecoming podcast, a lot of great sound design that is setting the scene, a lot of great work that is done that way with phone calls and places that you're wondering where Colin Belfast is when he's talking in the phone. They had an interesting task in adapting something that was created for an audio medium. And I think you see a lot of that play out on the screen in fantastic ways, in inventive and creative ways that only the talents behind the show could bring to bear, I should say. You see that play out a lot, and in a lot of the scenes in this show. You're like, yeah, maybe this was conceived as an audio show. And I can see in this scene how that was the case. But I can also appreciate how they're playing with that, how they're taking that as the root and building something completely new out of that. So there's a lot of that in this show. The visual style of this show, it's similar to moments of Mr. Robot for sure. If you're familiar with what Sam Esmail does on this show, it has the same production designer as Mr. Robot. There is a lot of shared DNA with that show. But you're right, Josh. The way the camera moves, the way that a lot of these shots are set up, it's every bit The Conversation. It's every bit Vertigo. It's every bit these classic thrillers from the 50s and 60s and 70s. It's using the same soundtracks from those movies to set that mood. It is a little bit washed out at times. I don't want to spoil one of the key things that goes on in this show, but there are some very creative visual things that happen with this show that speak to story, that speak to feel, that speak to setting the scene of what you're dealing with, so that they've taken an audio show, a show that had all these things that were done from an audio standpoint to set the scene or to create the mood or to make you feel a certain way. They've adapted all that into a visual medium, and then they've added on top of that. So it's a really phenomenal thing to experience. There's just nothing like it that I've seen on TV in a while. It reminds me a little bit of brooding like thrillers like Rubicon or some of those espionage type thrillers that maybe have been, but it is its own thing for certain, even though it is very much a tribute to those classic films. Very much worth checking out on that standpoint as well, from that standpoint as well.
Yeah, and I think for you and I, as people who love Sam Esmail from Mr. Robot, which is going to end relatively soon, it's going to end at some point in the not too distant future anyway, season 4 has been announced as its final season, and you got to imagine that's coming up in 2019, very, very likely. To see Sam Esmail direct a show, even if it's not his story, and again, if we're emphasizing that, like, the story, it kind of takes a backseat to all the other elements that are working so well here on the show, very exciting stuff about the direction of that man's career. So I'm very excited to see what he does next, but I'm thrilled to see what he did here in Homecoming, which is a huge success for all the reasons that you've outlined. I think also like the themes and the you know, the ideas that it's playing with, and a really smart, caring, careful exploration of PTSD, and the way that, you know, paranoia messes with your mind, and like the things that you're willing to do for power in the cases of certain characters, and just what you're what you're up against in your quests for peace. And I'm not talking about Superman 4. Like, that's all, it's artfully done. It's very, very artfully done. I think we're at the point now that, like, if we haven't sold you on checking out Homecoming, we've already, you know, we've been talking spoiler free for the length of an episode of Homecoming at this point. Go check out the show, or continue with us now, because we're gonna start getting into this from a spoiler perspective. We're gonna start talking about the story in a much deeper way. We're going to start talking even not so much about the story, but a lot of the filming techniques and the way that the story is presented, which itself is a bit of a spoiler. Right. So we're going to get into that now. Turn off the podcast.
Watch the show. Don't just listen to this podcast. I mean, honestly, if you downloaded this, delete the podcast at this point. I don't want you to listen. No, you already downloaded it. What do we care? No, I'm just kidding. But please, just watch the show. If you have Amazon Prime, watch it. And if you've not, save this until you have Amazon Prime. You should watch the show.
100%. Okay, so with all of that said, if you have not turned off your phone, then you want to be here with us for the next bit of conversation. And I think, Antonio, I would love to talk about the aspect ratio, I think, is the thing to guide us through the next little bit, which is that it's not only that this story takes place inside the Homecoming Initiative and what Heidi is doing and her work with Walter Cruz, and she's pushing back against Colin Belfast, her boss, because as we come to find out, the Homecoming Initiative, maybe not really super on the level, maybe a little tiny bit shady. Yeah.
It's not really about homecoming.
Not really. You know, that's sort of how it's presented to these veterans, where they're coming home and they think that they are going to be reacclimated to society and their pain is going to be eased through therapy, and they're going to, you know, find their bearings a little bit as they're coming home. But even just like the facility itself induces paranoia. Great character played by Jeremy Allen White, Schreier, who is like deeply, deeply skeptical of everything that's happening at Homecoming. They're always eating lunch at the same exact day. all of their meals have to be in the cafeteria.
Lingers over the pineapple.
Yes, they're serving us pineapple cobbler to really reinforce this fake idea that we're in Florida, so we got to break out of here and prove that we're not in Florida. Like, all of this stuff that's going on, and they're ultimately going to find out, you know, no, we're totally in Florida. Like, that's not a ruse. But Schreier's not wrong that there's something amiss, and the thing that's amiss is this isn't just therapy. These people are being medicated yes. against their will, where their food is being spiked with this stuff that is designed to target the memories that give them PTSD, that give them so much trauma, that have wounded them so severely emotionally. Erase that stuff and get them ready to go back to war, to basically just like reset your soldiers and ship them right back out. And Colin Belfast, the Cannavale character, has like an incredibly cynical attitude about how all of that works and how we're just trying to get them to do their job again. And what's, you know, we're not trying to like waste perfectly good trained material. And it's very dark and told in a very stunning way across the season, where there's the story that's taking place inside the initiative, and then there's the story that's taking place like 4 years ish later, a few years later, and it's being told in a completely different way
visually. And this is part of the reason why I said watch the show first, because obviously that's not readily apparent as you're watching it. A huge part of the confusion is, what is going on here? Why does this look like it was shot on an iPhone when the person forgot to turn their phone sideways? Like, what is happening here? And why is this just seemingly so different? And why does Julia Roberts not remember any of this? And what is going on here? The camera lingers over the kitchen door. We, in one episode, follow the quote unquote medicine from the fields in Vietnam all the way to the kitchen of the Homecoming Initiative, but we don't go in the kitchen until one of the very late episodes. So there's a lot of suspense and a lot of confusion, and that feeling is built throughout the course of these episodes, and it's not lost because of the pacing of the episodes. They're just so quick from point to point that it built, that you don't lose what is being built as you're watching it. We've talked a lot about the showrunner's paradox on these shows, of when you create a show that people can watch episodically or week to week, how do you make it so that it also works in a binge? Because there are some of these shows that work better when you're creating a cliffhanger moment that everyone can talk about on TV for a week or a summer, at the in the instance of some of the end of season moments or something to that effect, that's going to play entirely differently when you can just click next and play the next episode. And I think this is a show that it knew it was being made for a streamer. It knew it was being made so that people could watch them all at once. And it took advantage of that, because it never really lost that sense of confusion that is created by the shifting in aspect ratios. We see so much of Julia Roberts's confusion because we feel it as viewers. Why are we watching this in a different way? And it is a good way to delineate between the timelines after the big reveal of what's going on with that aspect ratio, which is entirely worth it, by the way. I know there are people that when they were watching Homecoming were very frustrated with the aspect ratio issue. And Sam Esmail was tweeting like, keep watching. You keep watching. You'll be all right with this. It's a great payoff. But after that payoff, there are moments where we go back to the timeline of when the confusion was there and the aspect ratio is back to the iPhone style presentation with a lot of it blocked off. I thought that was a brilliant way to convey the confusion that is, of course, there in the podcast, and is much harder to convey in the podcast because you're only dealing with the audio of a confused Catherine Keener not recognizing someone, or maybe you wonder, is she lying or what's going on? And certainly that feeling is there on the show, but I think the show just does such a fantastic job of playing with that. I wish I had not heard the podcast first, because I wish I had been as disoriented story-wise as this show encouraged and allowed me to be with the way that it was being presented. So a really top-notch job of that, just lingering so many moments. I think you made a great observation earlier about the credits. I think the credits give you that little bit of a pullback where you can just sit in something for a couple of minutes and just really sit in a long take of whether it's the exterior of the restaurant.
Pelican in the office,
whatever it is. There's the best one is, of course, when Heidi is crying at her her desk at the end of episode 8. It is a phenomenal moment. And you sitting and stewing in those scenes for a couple of minutes is just a breather. It's like, okay, take a breath now. We're out of the confusion. You can just stew in this one scene for just a minute and we're going to get right back into it. So I'm just building in a breather here for you, with whatever we're doing with this extended take for the credits. So I just thought this was created and crafted incredibly. And really, like you said, when you were talking about how 10 out of 10 in terms of the presentation, 7 out of 10 in terms of the story for you, the 10 out of 10 in terms of the presentation is just something that can't be talked about enough.
So, yeah, so there's, you know, it's boxed in the 2022 timeline, which is when all the future stuff takes place. And 2018 is the Homecoming initiative, which is presented in widescreen. And you get to that great moment in 2022 when that boxed in aspect ratio expands to the widescreen once Heidi understands what her involvement was with the Homecoming initiative. Because, of course, as we've come to find out, she herself has like intentionally dosed herself and Walter as well with enough medicine that she was like going to totally torture memories, and certainly going to put Walter in a bad way as well, as a means of getting him removed from the program and not being a sign of success and maybe having a shot at living a peaceful, albeit slightly amnesiac life moving forward. And that moment is so wonderful when she puts the full picture together. And I did get a chance. I did a lot of coverage of this show for the Hollywood Reporter. Spoke with most of the main players involved, including, if I may just brag for a second, Julia Roberts, who was spectacular. She's everything that you would want her to be. She's a super perfectly nice human being, and it was a delight.
Yeah. Did you tell her that she looked like the actress in Ocean's 12?
I did. I said, you look so familiar. I'm a big Ocean's trilogy fan.
And or is it Ocean's 13, which the worst plot point of all time?
I believe it's 12.
The worst plot point of all time. The absolute worst.
It wasn't great.
Worst plot point of all time.
But in those interviews, I got to talk to Sam Esmail, and this was certainly one of the things that I wanted to find out about, was this decision to, to box Heidi in the future and then let her out of the cage in that moment towards, is it episode 8 when that shift occurs?
Yes, that's the end of episode 8, or the three quarters of the way through episode 8.
So this is what Esmail said about the decision to do it like that. He says, we always look at filmmaking from the aspect of the character because we're in their point of view. With Heidi in 2022, the lighting is a little flatter. The colors are a little more desaturated, and that's because her world is kind of more defeated. Whereas in 2018, she's eager and enthusiastic and hopeful about her new career. In 2022, she's in this low place. And the other thing is she's not seeing the full picture. She's not fully understanding what happened to her, and she doesn't understand the causes, and that's what's really informing the aspect ratio. She doesn't see the full picture that she does in 2018, and it's just brilliant. And I think like all of that really clicks together once you get that, you know, total blockbuster moment of Heidi. Like here, I think it's she recognizes the pelican, right?
Yes.
The pelican's been driving her crazy while she's working at Homecoming. Yes, it was driving her nuts when she worked at Homecoming. The whole place is totally redesigned when she's there now. In 2022, and she has no trigger, but then she hears that pelican and suddenly it all snaps back into place for her, and the curtains roll back out, and we're reaping all the benefits of this moment where Heidi is putting the picture together. And I think once you see that happen, the utility of the aspect ratio makes so much sense all of the sudden. But I think to hear that from Esmail and understand that that was really the intention behind the filmmaking, that it was so story-based, it's just spectacular, and I think speaks so highly of his vision and why something that feels a little odd coming from him or feels like really oddly, weirdly specific always, in his mind at the very least, has intention, and his intention lands with such tremendous impact in this late stage of the season here.
How do you feel about the fact that the show itself, the story of the show, and we can talk about this in the Mr. Robot context or not, but also with that kind of move, with the aspect ratio, this is backdoor sci-fi. This is a science fiction show. Yeah. It's a science fiction thriller, but it's presented on the level like it's a show about PTSD. By the end of episode 8, you realize this is a science fiction show. Like, there's been something going on. It's presented in such a way that you find out it's the medicine. It's a medicine that can affect the brain. Her brain has been affected. That's what's been going on this whole time. It's an Eternal Sunshine type type moment in terms of this medicine. How do you feel about science fiction being presented in a show that ostensibly is not necessarily a science fiction show and how that played out?
Yeah, I think it's really subtle. I'm curious to see where it goes in season two. I think, like, to answer your question, I think we need to advance the narrative ball a little bit further down the line so we can kind of talk about the ending of the season, where we've established now through talking this through that there's this medicine that's being used to eliminate painful memories, and it may have it may work incredibly effectively, unfortunately, for this, you know, really terrible purpose of these, you know, this, you know, this militarized company that really wants to just, like, you know, do some significant war profiteering, and probably would be very, very successful if not for the fact that Heidi screws it up by
wants the DOD to give them money so they can put these drugs in soldiers' brains and send them back to war and redeploy them so that they can be effective in war and not have to carry around the horrors of war.
Exactly. And so, which brings us back to the gnocchi joke from earlier in the podcast, where there's that great moment late in the season where Heidi, now understanding what's going to happen because Walter forgets this. And this is so great. This is probably the best moment of writing, I think, in the whole season. Is there's
just straight from the podcast.
Yes. There's this story, Titanic Rising, that Walter tells Heidi about, where he and his war buddies were basically, they were effing with their friend out on the field, who was like a huge Titanic fan, and every night he would go to sleep watching Titanic on his little DVD player, and they eventually started messing with him about this sequel that was made, Titanic Rising, was just like tremendous, and it blows Titanic out of the water and everybody survives and Jack is back and he's having sex with, like, you know, one of, like, the upper class people, and Rose is having sex with the captain at this point.
That's why the Titanic hit the iceberg.
Yes, exactly. It's so funny. And the dialogue, I think, if not exactly from the podcast, it's very close. And the scene is just so amazing. And it has this incredible finale, like this climax to the story, where you're laughing so hard because it's just so ridiculous. And you come to find out that the guy who made the joke up in the first place was killed in action before he got the chance to tell the person they were punking that they were punking him. And eventually they just had to tell him, like, we were punking you. We can't keep telling you the story because it's not real. And later in the season, Heidi is talking with Walter, and Walter doesn't remember Titanic Rising at all. And it's the sign that the medicine is incredibly effective in eliminating painful memories. And Heidi realizes that these people are not being treated to eliminate their pain. They're being redesigned to go back to war. And so Heidi laces her huge heaping, well, she doesn't lace it. She takes, like, a huge heaping plate of medically enhanced gnocchi primavera and plops this mountain of pasta in
front
of herself.
Nice of you to notice the zucchini, Josh.
I mean, it's just, it looks so tasty, but it looks like you need to have like 10 stomachs to eat that entire plate, and they just crush it. They crush all that pasta, and it's no bueno. It's not good. And that's going to screw with Walter so badly because it's all, like, very deliberately staged, like week one meals, week two meals, whatever. And they're going way off script with this. Heidi should not be eating this stuff at all. Frankly, nobody should, but he's already kind of indoctrinated to the stuff. It gets Walter kicked out of the program. It ruins Heidi's brain to the point where she doesn't remember any of this stuff at homecoming. She becomes a waitress. She's living with her mom, who's played by the great Sissy Spacek. And then she starts getting, like, drawn back into the drama of, like, what happened back then? Why don't I remember stuff? What happened to my life? Thanks in large part to Shea Whigham's character, Carrasco, who has the best glasses on television in 2018. Don't at me. And as she goes further along that path, she's eventually going to remember Walter, and she's going to seek him out, and she seeks out Walter. She finally finds Walter. The final episode of the Amazon drama really artfully yada yadas through the entire second season of the podcast.
Yes, so good. Good job.
Where in the
maybe
podcast,
the best work they do on Homecoming, the TV show.
Where in the podcast, through two seasons of the podcast, Walter and Heidi have yet to, like, reunite in the, like, the quote unquote modern timeline. I believe that that Horowitz and Bloomberg have said also that they are not going to do the podcast anymore, so they will never meet in the podcast because there are two seasons of the podcast, and that's that. In the show, they meet in the final episode. They have this great scene together in the diner where it seems like Walter does not remember Heidi. For Heidi, it's enough to know that Walter is at peace, that he's living in this sleepy Northern California town where he's designing his own house and he's working on this porch, blah, blah, blah. And then there's this cue at the end of the conversation where it seems like either Walter maybe has been triggered by the presence of Heidi, who he seemed to have, you know, had feelings for back during their therapy sessions. It seems like either he's been triggered by her presence and maybe knows something now. It seems like maybe he knew the whole time is a possibility who Heidi was, and now he's like giving her the wink that I know who you are. Or maybe this thing with, that he does, which is he just like he messes with these perfectly laid out utensils, which is something that he does with Heidi throughout their therapy sessions together. Maybe that's just what's in the bones, is how the creators have referred to it. Maybe that's just what's in the bones of Walter. They leave it very purposely ambiguous, this final scene between Heidi and Walter, so that you have no idea what this is supposed to be. Everybody involved, to me, in my interviews with them and through this recording, we're recording this podcast on December 7th. Everybody has been astoundingly cagey about whether or not the story of Heidi and Walter is going to continue. Have we seen the last of Julia Roberts and Stefan James on Homecoming? It's very possible. And frankly, I kind of hope so. What season two could be is this final scene, the post-credit scene in the great Sam S. Male tradition, of there's this woman whose name I'm blanking on, the name of the woman who works for the Geist company, who
Colin's
is
assistant, well, Audrey, seemingly Colin's assistant, Audrey, yeah.
Yes, Audrey, who seems like Colin's assistant, maybe secretly like his like great superior, certainly is in a position of power by the end of the season. Colin has this big public freak out, which makes it look like his career is at the very least in significant jeopardy, if not outright over. And they have this moment where she like slides him some papers. He reads them. He seems very spooked by what he has read. He gets up, he leaves, and then Audrey rubs this like liquid
medicine
on her wrists after she's been shaking, as if it was like it took a lot of effort to have that moment with Colin. And what that suggests to me, Antonio, to get back to your question, is that the future of Homecoming is in this realm of at least light sci-fi, where they are talking about a world where pharmaceuticals can completely change your, I mean, it's not light sci-fi that pharmaceuticals can completely change your worldview. That's very much where we live now. But in this measure of what they're doing,
maybe
here,
there's another show about pharmaceuticals changing your worldview that we should talk about.
We should discuss. Yeah.
But no, you're right. Like that is it is a huge setup for what is the second season of this show, or what could be the second season of the show. I think that if you want to call it the post-credit scene, the mid-credits roll, whatever it is, the after-season credit scene that shows the next steps, keeping in mind, of course, that the season that we saw, or the modern day of Homecoming, is in 2022, right?
Right.
And the previous years of Homecoming, when they first started the Homecoming initiative, when Heidi and Walter first met, is 2018. So the modern day of the show would be 2022. In 2022, it appears that drug has been repositioned, much like Viagra was, where it was not invented for the cause that it now treats, and it was invented for something else. This is a drug that was being tested for one thing, but of course a much broader application would be to relieve anxiety, to allow people to apply it topically to relieve anxiety. And where does that go? We have the mysterious Mr. Geist, who is cited in this series but never appears, and is part of the Geist group. We know this is a huge conglomerate that doesn't just make medicines. They make the products that you use in your home, which is why Walter's mom is rightfully skeptical when she calls the DOD and finds out that the Geist group is the one who's in charge of the Homecoming initiative. She's like, why would these people who make these cleaning products be concerned about how he feels? They don't care about how he feels. Like, they have a much bigger agenda.
They want to make a coffee pot, you know? Yes. They want to make a blender.
Yeah, they want to make medicine that everyone's going to use. They want to make something that you're going to get addicted to. They're a horrible corporation, and I don't trust them. And it is that questioning that Walter's mom did it. And it is that conglomerate backed by Mr. Geist, the mysterious Mr. Geist. Josh, it's like Alvar Hanzo and the Dharma Initiative. But it is, there is something behind this curtain here that we haven't looked at. And we begin to peel that back in the, at the end of the season. And we sort of peek behind it at points throughout the context of the first season. Whatever Colin sees on that paper, he's not happy about. A lot of what happens in season two is finding out more about the Geist Group. Season two of the podcast. Yes, they don't cover a ton of ground from a story standpoint, but the undeveloped stuff from season two of the podcast very much is, what is the Geist Group? What do they do? Who is in charge of it? What are their goals? We see so much of how labyrinthine and how they have different verticals and their building and the various names of the rooms that Shea Whigham can barely navigate as he's trying to investigate this, but we've barely scratched the surface in terms of that. And certainly that will be a huge part of whatever the story of Homecoming season two is. Unquestionably, that will be a huge part of whatever the story of Homecoming season two is. And there is, I think, much to be mined. And certainly Sam Esmail is the kind of guy I want in charge of a show like that.
Well, he's not really involved in the writing, or at least he wasn't very much in season one. The writing is pretty much exclusively from the minds of Eli Horowitz and Micah Bloomberg, who came up with the podcast in their writer's room. But Esmail is not credited with writing a single thing. I think he obviously, given what he has done in his career and the way that he works, I'm sure had input along the way.
Yeah, he gets a created by credit, which I know he's creating the visual part, but directors don't always get a created by credit. So he's part of the creation of the TV show at this point. It'll be curious. I'm curious to see what role he plays in the writing of season two. I'm not thinking that he'll get writer's credits, but whether he's acting as the quote unquote show runner, where he's making the ultimate calls from a story standpoint, I don't think he's just a director who's coming in and directing these scripts. I think he plays a much bigger role in the show.
Yeah, especially if season two is going to be completely uncharted territory. Right. But my biggest question, I think obviously no matter what happens next, you'll see Esmail credited as an executive producer and he'll have that created by credit. But is he going to direct every episode of season two? Is he going to stay as intimately involved in the show as he was in season one? Again, the people involved have been very hush-hush about this, which is so fascinating to me that we know that Homecoming has a second season, that it's been renewed for a second season. It's also doing very well critically. Just got nominated for a slew of Golden Globes awards. So what's going to happen? But the talent involved is basically an enormous question mark. And I think the big question, given where the story ends in season one, have we seen the last of Heidi and Walter? And I would love to get your take on it, Antonio, but to spoil my take on it real quick is I love the way the story ends for them and I never want to see them again.
I'm okay with that. I really like how it ends, the Inception type ending, or like you said, the In the Bones type ending, where you get the sense that Walter knows that somewhere in his being that they knew each other, that they shared something. Whether or not he's actively toying with her is a matter we can debate. Do you have a strong take on that? If you watch the scene again, I've watched it a few times. There is a point where she looks away when the waitress comes up. That is when he chooses to do the thing with the I think whether it's a knife or a fork, with the utensil.
Right.
That's when he does it, when she's distracted. He takes that opportunity to do it. Now, maybe that's because he's distracted at that point, too. But if you want to operate under the Walter knows and he's just kind of screwing with her and he knows that she'll stick around and he knows this won't be the last time they see each other, then that's one thing. I don't know if Walter recognized her, I don't know if he would have been able to play it cool. I thought the performances in this scene were great because they didn't, I don't think they really betrayed whether the actors were feeling one way or another about this.
I believe that Esmail and Roberts' preference is that the connection between them in this moment triggers Walter.
I can buy that completely.
But I think that, and I'm not sure if this is 100% accurate, so don't hold me to it, but I believe that the creators have a different perspective. So I think that there is this conflicting...
this is Jamie Lannister all over again.
Well, but I like that. I like that there's sort of this conflicting viewpoint of how the scene played out, because I think that it plays in all three of those different ways. I think that you could imagine it. I think that the strongest version of it for me is much like we got to see with Heidi, where the world expands for her once she has this trigger that gives her a rush of memories flooding back. I love the idea that a similar thing is happening within Walter when he sees her, where he's having this moment where, oh man, this is all happening right now. Whether or not he would be able to maintain that certain shock level, or without betraying that shock and not just immediately being like, Heidi, you know, like, I don't know. But
awfully cool if that's what's happening.
Yeah. I like that interpretation the best. I think it's just kind of like the sweetest version of this sort of
Swedish version.
It's not Swedish. I like that version of this emotional journey for these two characters. But either way, I don't ever need the show to answer that question, because I cannot imagine where's the more compelling story for Heidi and Walter than the one that we just saw. Like, are they now going to team together and form like the anti-Geist Avengers to take down the group? I'm really not interested in that at all, personally. Like, I'm interested in finding out, like, more about Geist and digging in a little deeper there with a different set of characters and with, like, a completely different story. Bobby Cannavale can come along for the ride. Shea Whigham still has business. You know, Carrasco could keep digging in if he needs to. But I'm so satisfied with the way that it ends for Heidi and Walter that I really hope that they're done with that.
You don't want to watch Avengers End Geist?
No. I don't. I don't ever want to see that.
Yeah, no. It is right now. It's perfectly balanced as all things should be. So I really don't think we need to necessarily mess with it. And I think the idea in leaving it how they did is, who knows if you can get these two back. I don't know. I know the show was renewed for a second season. I have no idea what their contracts or options might look like, or what their windows are.
It's very enigmatic. Yeah,
no.
Yeah,
so no one really can say. I mean, maybe it's a scenario of where Amazon will take a step back and say, this was X successful as we wanted it to be. Clearly having Julia Roberts top line the thing was a major deal for Amazon, and whether or not we need Julia Roberts involved or whether or not that's the central selling point for this show is a decision Amazon may still want to make. And I'm sure it involves money, and I'm sure that involves timing, and there's a lot to be said from a creative standpoint of leaving it where it is, taking aside any of that other stuff. So that all TBD. I'm okay with it. I'm fine. I'm great with it leaving it where it is. I'd be great if there was no more Homecoming, even though I want to watch more. This would have been great as a one-off, and it would have been great playing how it did. The show itself could end right here, and I'd be satisfied knowing there's a shady corporation out here, just like many of these conglomerates. And this is something that exists in the world, and this is one of the things they were working on. And these are the kind of people that work at it, and these are the kind of people it affects. And this is the story, and that's the end of it. I would have been fine if this is it. The idea that we're getting a second season of Homecoming, I don't need these characters. Just like you're saying, I'm of the inclination that there was something deep in his bones, but I don't buy into the fact that he had his moment there, where it all came unfurled and he recognized that he knew her. I just don't see that in the performance. And I don't see that he would be trying to convey that he was even trying to keep that cool. Maybe there's a little bit of a moment where he recognizes that he should go talk to her, but I think it's because she's looking at him like she just saw a ghost. Right. And I think he's really taken aback by that. But it can play multiple ways. We've, Josh, famously covered, or maybe not famously, we bent the internet. We didn't break it. We've covered another show where there was a great reunion between characters and in the final episode, and one character and the other character, did they know each other, did they remember each other, was a central part of this, of that episode. And I felt like there were some comparisons to be made here, and I feel like in this instance I didn't feel as strongly about what was going on as I did about that other instance with the show that we covered. So I don't have a strong take on what was going on here. I like that it's so open-ended that I don't feel like anyone is wrong, no matter how they feel, and there's open for all of them.
And I just want to let the mystery be, you know, to pull a phrase, you know, I really
That's
do.
That's really,
I think,
clever of you to say that. You should really write that one down.
I just think it's a stronger ending if we never know. I was just about to say nobody wants Inception 2, but I think plenty of people would love to see Inception Rising, yet another Leonardo DiCaprio sequel.
Yes, bring him back.
That seems very unlikely.
Just having sex with Tom Hardy the whole time.
Yeah, That'd be great. But I just don't think anyone needs it. I don't think anyone needs the Heidi and Walter show part two. I think the story ends very well for them there. And so if it goes, you know, it is going to go on for a second season, and it will very likely dig deeper into this light sci-fi that we've outlined. And I think that it worked really well for the sake of this story. I just don't know that I'm like terribly interested. Like I don't know that I'm interested enough in the world that I'm just going to lose my mind for whatever they do whenever they announce it. It's really all going to come down to talent, who is involved. What are the names that we're seeing? If it's like an anthological thing and we're going to see Julia Roberts and Stephan James and all these people come back but playing different characters. Not my favorite outcome, but I'm here for it. I love those actors.
You mentioned the Avengers, and there maybe is a little something to be said for that, because we haven't talked a ton about Shea Whigham's character. A great performance. I think something that is much better on the screen than was in the podcast. This
for sure.
Particular role.
Absolutely.
Some fantastic character notes from his costumes to his gestures. Some great just little moments and scenes that are written in there to take the wind out of this guy's sails. He's always falling over or falling downstairs or embarrassing himself.
Snap in half.
Those
and
glasses
then come
are
back
fantastic.
Yeah,
one of the best.
Awesome.
Yeah, one of the best.
Jealous,
kind of
very jealous.
Little character moments in terms of his just meticulousness.
He looks like my Uncle Steve, but cool.
Well, your Uncle Steve might be more than he lets on, Josh. Like maybe you should treat your Uncle Steve with a little more respect, and we shouldn't push Uncle Steve around because he just is seen as a cog. But Steve is a cog, Josh, that rotates another cog that rotates a greater wheel. I just thought great role in the place here for Shea Whigham, and he walks away from his job at the end of his story in this season of Homecoming, and he leaves his chair spinning, and he's done his big thing, and he's not going to bow down to his seemingly corrupt boss. I think there's more to be mined there. And I think the first kinds of people that he's going to be looking to work with would be the Walters of the world, especially since Heidi knows more about Homecoming, if she's remembered it, than just about anyone other than Colin Belfast, and seemingly has been willing to work with him. So I think there's the opportunity, if you're telling that story with Shea Whigham's character, it makes the most sense that those are the people that he would try to contact. Whether or not he's successful or whether or not you can tell the story without that, it just makes sense that we would go there and that he would be a major part of a season two of Homecoming. I'm glad we both really like that character.
Yeah, but I think that goes back, at least for me, to that feeling of like, the story is a 7 out of 10 for me, where like, I don't care enough about the story that's what I want to see. The most that I care about the story is that I want it to be over in that regard for these characters.
Yeah.
That I think to continue the story for these characters risks turning that 7 out of 10 into a lower rating for
this
me.
This is, I'm sure, what they struggled with when they were writing the second season of
exactly,
the podcast, right?
Exactly.
This is, we've got this great arc and we've told this great story and we know what the end of it should be or what we want it to be. How do we make it compelling for as long as this successful podcast shall continue? Got to keep them apart. Like, we don't have the next idea about what we should do with these characters in a meaningful way. They should ride off into the sunset together and that's that. But once you do that, like, that major part of the story is gone. So there's going to have to be a repiloting of sorts with season two of Homecoming, or at least a resetting of the circumstances and the emotional drama, because so much of the emotional drama of season one is wrapped up in Walter and Heidi, and that seemingly is put to bed. So I don't want to see that interrupted.
Give me new actors and new characters who can really hang with the style and the substance.
Schreier is still around.
With that.
You know,
yeah.
Schreier is still around. That's a great performance by that guy who is
Jeremy Allen White. He's
Jeremy Allen White,
on Shameless.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Lip. He's fantastic in this show, playing multiple shades of Schreier, and I think you've got a lot. Maybe he's a guy who you could get, and maybe he's a guy who wants to be on the show in a season two if these two are busy, and this is a good way. That's somebody that you might want to try to fix. I think that's the other thing, is that you have to consider the moral weight of, if you are Heidi. And one of the fantastic things they did with this show, and I think visually this played out a lot better than it does on the podcast, is when she goes back and moves in with her mom, they make her more childlike. They make her clothing more childlike. She's always wearing pants. She's sitting cross-legged at the laundry. This is certainly purposeful by the production design and the costume design to make it look like, you know what, she kind of failed at her life. She bounced around. This was her big thing, and it flamed out. And her mom is protecting her, and all of this is going going on. What is her next move? If she is walking around with the knowledge that there is a thing out there that has been done to these soldiers that maybe they've sent back, I don't know how she puts that to bed, the guilt of that. She's made her peace with Walter. There's an opportunity, I think, to say from a moral standpoint, her victory will be still claimed. And whether or not that's with her or whether or not that's with Shea Whigham's character, who also seemingly knows about what's going on and has walked away from his official role because nothing's getting done, that's a part of the story that needs to be told. And I think you can work the Schreier character in. I mean, that guy's broken AF. Like, he does not, he's handing leaves out, Josh. Like, he's looking for the Yellow King. This guy right. is broken. So there's a way, I think, to make, let's help the people that were the victims of the Homecoming Initiative as part of the story of season two, whether or not that involves Heidi and or Walter or not. I think that could be part of it. Maybe even just in a small way. Maybe it doesn't need to be the whole aspect. Maybe you just get them for one or two episodes if that's all you've got. I don't know if there is hope that they'll make a Homecoming 3. It was renewed for a second season. Is this a thing where they want to now try to, if they're repiloting the show, build a sustainable property? And if that's the case, then you're talking about a much different scenario than let's just make one more and go. So there's a lot to be said for the Homecoming creators and the job they have ahead of them. It's no wonder they don't want to make the podcast anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Antonio, anything else from the season yes. that you really want to dig into that we did not get into? Because I don't have much, so I would love to get your takes.
I would like a rating from you on a scale of 0 to 10, where 0 is large Richard energy and 10 is big dink energy. Give me Anthony, give me the boyfriend, give me the how much of a dink, 0 to 10, is this performance of Anthony? We've got two different roles, two different actors playing this role, podcast and show. I want to know, 0 to 10, big dink energy, what do we got from what Dermot Mulroney is putting up here as Anthony?
You sure that's not Dylan McDermott?
Oh my gosh, Mulroney. This joke, that is Dermot Mulroney. What yes. what are we doing with Dermot Mulroney here?
The great 0 to 10. Mahadeo, who has appeared on post-show recaps in the past. I don't remember which one he was unaware of. I think he did not know that Dermot Mulroney existed. And the night that I told him that there is somebody named Dermot Mulroney who looks vaguely like Dylan McDermott and the two often get confused, I watched a man's brain explode in front of me. It was
like a Mandela effect coming together.
It was really one of the highlights of my life. So just for the few of you
your
who,
life.
it was really tremendous. So for the few of you who know Kevin from his stint here on Post-Show Recaps back in the day, maybe we'll enjoy that. Dermot Mulroney playing Anthony, Heidi's boyfriend, who is voiced by David Cross in the podcast. So that just like tells you what the essence of the character is.
Right.
That this is a character. Who is Funke-esque for sure. And what I love about it for the sake of the show is it's really playing with the expectations of people who remember Julia Roberts and Dermot Mulroney very fondly for like My Best Friend's Wedding.
Right.
And it's just like a total inversion of that where Julia Roberts has no interest in this guy at all. He is just such a butt.
He's a dink. Yeah. 10 out
He's
of 10.
Total dink. 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. Big dink yeah. energy.
Big dink energy.
What about, I don't know if Jacob Pitts, Josh, our boy, Tim Gutterson from Justified is in this show as a lark because he likes to work and because Sam Esmail likes working with good actors. Similarly, we have Frankie Shaw in this show for yes. a very bit role. Are these just like, let's get people that I like to work with? Or do you think there's any role for those two who seem to have some kind of thing going on, in the future of this show?
I think Frankie Shaw has to be way too busy with her own show with
Smilf. You would
think,
but she made this show, so
yeah. But she's barely in it, and right. I could imagine the scenario where she's just like she's buddies with Sam Esmail, and Sam Esmail is like, I'm making this show. Julia Roberts is in it. Do you want to act with Julia Roberts for a bit and like be a part of this? And her being like, yeah,
100%. Good call.
That is absolutely what I want to do. But she's I don't know if you watch Smilf. I love that show. I
haven't watched it, but I've heard fantastic things about that show.
I really love that show. Very, very funny. and you know, I was
OTT,
you know,
though, right? Like way OTT.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, but it's very, very, very good, and I'm thrilled for her that she seems to have a lot of bright things in her future. And of course, I love Jacob Pitts, who plays Gutterson on Justified, which is another show Antonio and I podcasted about, and both deeply love that show and love that character who pops up from time to time on the Sneaky Pete, pops up in many different ways, and here he is briefly on Homecoming. Here, he and Frankie Shaw are playing the two people that Julia Roberts works with at the diner in the 2022 storyline, and I can't imagine that we would see anything more with them unless they continued the Heidi story, which again, I just don't want to see.
No, and I really don't want to see Heidi back in Florida or wherever that was, with working at that job and dealing with everything there. That's the last place I want to see Heidi again. If we continue the Heidi story, I want it to be, like I said, where she feels some sort of moral compunction to assist the trauma that was created to her, where she self-inflicted it, but as a result of everything that happened at the Homecoming Initiative, is so significant because she's presented as such a fastidious character who rolls up her spoon in a paper towel every day, who arranges the things on her desk just so. She is that kind of person. To wipe the memory out of that person and to create that sense of like just anxiety or confusion in that kind of person, I mean, it's like punching Pavarotti in the throat. Like, this is not, you're taking something that is the
Parvati.
My apologies, I misunderstood. Yeah, this is a name someone was given by their parents for some reason. So at any rate, like, this is somebody that was punched. This is a bad deal for her. She did it to herself, but she did it because of what happened. I don't know. It is not clear how much she really remembers every single detail of what happened. Never mind the fact, the most terrifying or upsetting change, Josh, that was made is that horrible thing that Colin Belfast does in sleeping with her. This is brutal. Yeah. I do not like that at all. Very upsetting. No.
Very, very upsetting. And if there's like any part of you that is like interested in him as a character and like you kind of like him and like maybe he's misunderstood, and then like he just like straight up sleeps with Heidi knowing everything and her knowing nothing, and
she's not in a position to give her consent to that. I mean, she's essentially on a years long GHB rip. Like, this is bad. She's been drugged and cannot fully consent to what's happening, and he's lying to her about it. It is if I were a prosecutor, I would prosecute him, and I would probably get pilloried for it, but I'd do it anyway. This is horrible behavior, and he goes to apologize to his wife, Josh, and what she says, put it in the box, I don't want to hear about it. They have a very odd Lady Macbeth kind of relationship, Lady Macbeth and Macbeth kind of relationship with Mr. and Mrs. Belfast there.
Maybe she'll get shot in the head in the first couple of episodes of season two. Christ. For no reason.
Oh, I see what you're doing there. Yeah, no,
it's a joke about another show. It is not like an actual wish.
You can't do that. We can't do that.
We can't do that. No, what if there, you know, the I don't know. I mean, I would imagine that if the story is continuing in some way, that those are characters that could continue on.
Yeah, like, episode 9 where we see him coming home and saying, I did something, I have to tell you about it. And she's like, what do we do when you do something and you want to tell me about it? It's not going to be good for anybody. We put it in the box, and there's a box right there in the room, and she knows about what he's doing. Like, he says the DOD guy was there. She knows the details of his work. She is intimately involved. They are power hungry together as a couple, so there is something there for sure with those characters in season two. Maybe they thought, well, Bobby Cannavale is a guy we might be able to work with again, and if we created this show that so we could have him as one of the lead characters carrying this forward, I'd be okay with that. And I think maybe that's part of it. So I don't know what we're doing there, but that is a horrible thing that he did. Honestly, just I'm appalled thinking about it. I still am appalled. Unbelievable.
It was awful. It was truly, truly terrible.
And did you think that they made that change just because they wanted him to be truly unappealing, or what's the reasoning for making it go all through with that? I mean, have you read anything or had them talk about that change at all? That's a much of the show is word for word from the podcast. That's a
and
significant
it's a deviation
change.
For sure. Yeah, we had limited time in our interviews, all in a junket setting, which is like a very weird song and dance for those who don't go through that whole rigmarole. So it's like in a hotel and you've got like 10 minutes with two people at once. Really not a great venue for any of that. We didn't really get into it, but I think for me, it is like another mark in the column of the writing is a 7 of 10 for me on this show, where I don't really feel like there was a great reason to go down that road.
He brings it up later because he says, like, yeah, I hope what happened last night. And I think he's trying to undermine her to Shea Whigham when he says that, like, you and me, right, we're together. Like, look what we did. But I don't think that's a good enough reason to have it happen.
I agree. I think there isn't enough that justifies that side trip, that storyline, for me in the material that we end up getting for the rest of the season. I think it's a misfire for me. It did not work at all.
Well, and along the lines of the writing, I do wish there had been some more modification of some of the scenes, because even though they were so well written on the podcast, having listened to Keener and Isaac create those characters, I thought Oscar Isaac was fantastic, and Catherine Keener is always fantastic, but I thought Oscar Isaac was really good at what was going on with Walter. And I just thought that some of those scenes didn't have the same energy as I felt when I first heard them on the podcast. It just felt different, and it didn't land in the same way. And I'm not sure I could gauge whether that was because of the performances or because I already knew this character having been created somewhere else. So I do wish they had changed some of that. I'm glad for a season two, because these are the same guys who wrote those scenes to begin with, so you know they've got some game. I'm glad for a season two that allows them to stretch their wings a little bit, especially with the guidance and with what they're already dealing with on the table here. I think the flaws of season two of the podcast probably come from what we said. The idea that we might need to stretch this out. How long should it go? If we bring them together, it's over. How do we deal with that? And where do we kind of put some air in this story? I don't think they are going to suffer from the same issues in season two of a TV show. So I'm looking forward to it for sure.
Anything else from Homecoming?
No, just the soundtrack is really the only other thing we talked about.
Fun.
It's just fantastic, from the Andromeda Strain to Vertigo. Like, just the piece that I thought that stood out the most to me is from the end of episode 8. It's called Amy's Theme. It's from The Conversation, which is a brilliant film that everyone should watch if you haven't seen it. Most recently referenced directly on Better Call Saul at the end of the second to last season, the second to most recent season of Better Call Saul. Strong conversation vibes there, but Amy's Theme from The Conversation, I just did my Spotify recap 2018, and that made it to my top 100 most played songs, strictly because of the month that Homecoming has been out.
That's amazing.
I played it over and over again. So good at the end of that episode. Just phenomenal to have us deal with that. Her release when she's crying at her desk, I think that's the highlight of the whole series for me, because it is the culmination of everything.
I loved those endings. I really did. Like, not to undersell them of like, oh, well, you're another reason to get into the show is because you're going to have like 3 minutes of dead air at the end of every episode. No, I loved that stuff.
So
I thought it was so much fun to just like linger with somebody for a while. The scene that you're describing now where she's just crying being one of them, but also just like staring down the bird in an office in a place where it absolutely should not be. It's a delight. A delight. The filmmaking of this, top notch.
There are the Homecoming podcast. If you subscribe to the feed, they did 3 episodes of, I believe, the Gimlet Media podcast Startup, which is a show that is their look at, well, the first season was the starting of Gimlet Media, but then they've gone back to feature stories about Gimlet Media throughout. But they did 3 episodes behind the scenes of the creation of the Homecoming TV show. What happened, how it went from a scripted podcast to a TV show, who was involved. And they talk about how hard to work with that bird and everything that came to get that bird onto the set came to be. So, because clearly if it is truly an endangered species, you can't work with it in the way that they could, and there was a lot of wrangling that had to go on. There's just some fun stories that go with that. So if you're a fan of the show and you don't want to necessarily listen to the narrative podcast, you might enjoy those behind the scenes podcasts as well. They're very short, so there's not much going on there, and they do give you some good. The first one has Sam Esmail and the creators of this show, Josh, they never met until they had written season 1. They did it all over the phone.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's wild. Yeah, I know that they hadn't had like a long, huge, long creative partnership before the podcast, if I'm remembering. Yeah,
Gimlet had hired this guy to create scripted content, and then he was going out and watching like one act plays and stuff like that in New York. And he saw something that he liked and he was like, I'm going to hit this guy up. And so they worked on four ideas, and ultimately Homecoming was the one that they went with. They wrote and created season one, and they didn't ever meet until season one was completely written.
Wow. It's amazing.
Now they're power, BFF. Now they live together.
Power of the internets.
They don't live together. I made that up.
All right. That's it for us.
Should we tease something else? Should we tease what else we're going to do next?
Well, what do you want to tease? I guess you're going to be the person that's going to set this up. Let's do it.
I don't know what to do next. What are we doing next? What should we talk about next?
Well, I feel like we're talking about a show that is done in one. And I think that there are a couple, or potentially that is done in one. For me, I hope that it is done in one. And what I would love to talk about is yet another show that is absolutely done in one by all accounts of the people who were involved with it creatively. I think our next show that we should be talking about, another streaming service, limited commitment. I think it's 9 episodes total. I'm not sure if it made it to 10 episodes total. A huge A-list talent attached to it as well, much in the same vein here as Homecoming. If you missed it, not too late to go back and check it out. Certainly before we get into the podcast of Netflix's Maniac, I think is the next series that Antonio and I are going to be talking about here on this series of special podcasts as we're looking back on some of the shows in 2018 we have yet to discuss here on Post Show Recaps. I'm very excited about that because I know, Antonio, you really enjoyed Maniac.
I love it. I think it's the best Netflix original property that's ever happened.
Yeah. Oh, that's a hell of a tease. Let's say no more. It's a very specific show. So
it is. It may not be for everyone, but it is certainly for me.
All right. Antonio, what else is going on? Where can people find you? Are you doing the Twitter stuff these days?
Yeah, if you want to follow me on Twitter and you don't already, you have to pass through a gateway now. I've locked my Twitter down because it's my busy season. But you can hit me at AC Mazzaro with 2 Z's and 1 R.
Okay, and I am at Round Howard, so I am on the Twitter machine as well. Before we close out, let's just take a quick second to thank our friends over at True Car. Antonio, every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date. The luxury package you got after a big promotion. Or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with True Car, you can at least find out what your car is worth when it comes time to sell or trade it in. Just go to True Car, simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof? Watch as they bump up your value. High mileage? You already knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet or even bings your wallet so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out True Car today. True cash offer not available in all areas. All right, Antonio. Thank you so much. This was a blast. I love talking with you. And this is we've got great things ahead. Great things behind us and great things in front of us.
I've got some gnocchi waiting for me, so.
All right. Go eat. Bye. Bye.